They say this jive turkey-rich outfield is a weak-ass mother.
Shut your mouth.
But I'm talking about rich outfield.
Oh, okay. That makes it all right.
This is Rish Outfield. This is the Rish Outcast. And boy, I've got a special story for you today. Well, it's a special episode, but I said story, which is a Freudian slip. We got a story called... Oh, shoot, what's it called? I don't know. You'll have to listen and find out. Oh, good for you guys. You picked the right day to quit smoking or snorting glue or to listen to the Rish Outcast. Go ahead. I wrote it for you. You, all right? I wrote it for watching you. Wait. You, all right? I wrote it while watching you.
Chalupadale, Next Exit, by Rish Outfield. Big Anthony was getting hungry. Sure, he'd grabbed two semi-fresh kraut dogs at the last gas station, with extra relish. But he'd been on the freeway for 3 hours since then. His big Cadillac Eldorado didn't get great gas mileage. Actually, it was pretty terrible. But he wouldn't need to stop for gas again for at least another hour or so. He'd been out of Chicago the whole week, doing a little debt collecting for the Moretto family. And yes, he'd broken a couple of fingers. Not his own, mind you. But now he was on his way home, listening to old Faith Hill CDs on the stereo. Through the corner of his eye, he saw a sign that looked like it said Chalupa on it, but could have been his copious stomach overriding his vision.
Chalupa'd sure hit the spot, he told the empty car.
Nobody answered. If there were ghosts, and there might well be, they weren't talking. A couple of miles down the freeway, he was now in the barest, ruralest area he could imagine, with only the occasional trailer or small farm on either side of the long stretches of road. He saw another sign, this one announcing, Chalupadale, Next Exit. He scowled, figuring he'd read it wrong a second time. Chippendale was more likely. But no, when exit 281 came in sight, there was another sign. Chambliss, Hilton Grove, Chalupadale.
All right, I'm doing it, Anthony told the ghosts.
He pulled off the freeway, his was the only car in sight, and exited, following the sign west. During the next song on his CD, he discovered he had to drive through Chambliss, a one-horse town if he'd ever seen one, then 6 more miles to Chalupadale. Immediately, he regretted turning off.
6 miles,
he sighed to Carmine Munsey, who he'd once choked to death in this very Cadillac. Carmine had been a friend of his, but he'd gotten fresh with the Don's niece and, well, you know. If the deceased Carmine had indeed spoken up, Anthony would have turned the Eldorado around. Hell, he would have had a heart attack first, turned back second. But he just kept driving. Out here, there was nothing. No towns, no houses, not even streetlights. Even the scenery was unremarkable. A huge, sprawling junkyard, a pond with almost no water in it, a couple of apple orchards, and a great view of nothing. Was this worth it? Anthony was a big man, double XL, and he loved Mexican food. Spick eats, as Carmine had called it. But this was asking a lot. He did think about turning around, just doing a U-turn and heading back through the nothing to get back to the freeway and back on his way home. But it was almost as though the ghost of Carmine Munsey did whisper to him from the passenger seat beside him.
Chalupas.
Big Anthony actually glanced over, in case the purple-faced dead body of his friend was still there, as it had been in 97, when he'd been eliminated. Well, even if his buddy hadn't spoken, he would keep driving, trusting in his gut to guide him. It hadn't steered him wrong yet, except for the occasional heartburn, and a lot more flatulence than his ex-wife could tolerate. So he drove 2 more miles through little but trees and fences, a defunct railroad crossing, dirt roads, and what might have once been a mine to his left. Chalupadale, Pop 301, established 1996, read a sign right before a tiny, new-looking village. It was pretty, well laid out, and almost hilariously, there was a giant 3-foot cardboard, or was it metal, taco-looking sign right beyond the city limits. Within its shape were the words, "Soon to be world-famous Chalupas and Gorditas," at Tom's Diner up ahead.
"Tom's Diner," mumbled Anthony, "like that freaking song."
The worst earworm song ever. He shuddered. If it was playing when he walked in the door, Big Anthony might have to shoot someone. For free this time. He drove 2 more blocks. It was the main drag through town, and all there was here was a mom-and-pop grocery store, a tiny post office, a bed and breakfast, a 2-pump gas station, and Tom's Diner. He pulled the caddy into the lot. There were 6 parking places. All of them empty, and glanced ahead to make sure they were open. On the window, a big-chested cartoon señorita announced, "Chalupa for you," in a word bubble. Whatever that meant. Anthony got out, considered not locking his car, but did it anyway, and went into the restaurant. A bell dinged, cheery, non-abrasive. No one else was inside, but it was a clean, new-looking place, like everything in this town. Over old-fashioned speakers, there was a song playing, but it wasn't that terrible Suzanne Summers song from the 80s. It was a bizarre jingle playing from the speakers.
"Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them right. Everybody wants chalupas. We gonna eat 'em up tonight."
It was a familiar tune, and Anthony wondered if this was actually a franchise, and if there were any near Chi-Town. An elderly, plump waitress stepped out from the back, tying on an apron. She looked a lot like Aunt Bee on the old Andy Griffith show. She had a perma-smile, but that smile grew when she made eye contact with him. She called behind her.
28 to 30, Douglas."
Big Anthony didn't know what that was about. He hadn't looked 30 in 20 years, maybe more if he wanted to be honest. But he stepped up to the counter. There were 4 homemade menus in a holder, each with the cartoon señorita on them, and a thought balloon saying, "Me gustar chalupas." Probably not a franchise then. The waitress nodded at him, and darned if there wasn't genuine pleasure in her eyes at seeing him.
"Traveling through, mister. You visiting family?"
"Nope, just stopped off for a bite."
"Wow, did you hear that, Douglas?"
she called to the cook, who had walked past the order window from the kitchen.
"He came just for us."
Douglas said nothing, and she fished a pen from her apron and looked around for a pad to write his order on.
"Quite a place you have here,"
Anthony said. Half of the diner was done up to resemble a 50s neighborhood cafe, and the other half seemed to be filled with Mexican cliches, like sombreros, a busty lady in a red dress with a rose in her teeth, burros, a matador, and a SpongeBob SquarePants piñata.
"The town?"
asked the waitress.
"Thank you. I love it here. No cell phone reception, no mini malls yet, but peaceful, clean, traditional."
The jingle continued from the speakers.
Everybody wants chalupas. Everybody wants them now. If you wanna eat chalupas, we're the place to show you how.
He'd wager every dime he had that that would get real old real quick.
Sounds nice,
Big Anthony lied. He had no patience for the sticks. Anything important, anything valuable, happened in the city. To city people with street smarts, sophistication. But he was hungry, and there was a smell wafting out of the kitchen of tortillas and salsa and cooking meat. He was glad he came, off the beaten track or not.
You only sell chalupas. Or do you have tacos and burritos?
Oh, sure. Flautas, enchiladas, chimichangas, fajitas,
she said, mispronouncing every word.
But the chalupas are what people remember, what they come back for, time and time again.
All right, lady, sold, he said, raising his hands. Give me, say, 3 chalupas.
The woman nodded, then paused.
We're just putting the meat in the fryer, mister. I'm sure we can bring you out one now, but it'll be a wait for the other 2.
Huh, Anthony said. What kind of restaurant doesn't have meat?
A vegetarian one?
Offered the waitress, and then shrugged.
I didn't say we didn't have any meat. Just that we only have enough ready for 1 chalupa.
He shrugged back, only bigger.
If I gotta wait, then maybe it should be free.
Maybe you're right,
the woman said, then went to the cabinet and got a mug down.
Got some coffee for you, though. How you like it?
So much sugar it makes you sick.
Uh-huh.
She handed him the sugar dispenser and punched no sale on the cash register. It might have been an antique.
326, please.
Why, you just said it'd be free.
She lifted a bone.
What? Didn't you just say it'd be free
She lifted a stubby finger.
Tell you what. Tell you what, mister. Pay for this one. If it's not the best Mexican food you ever tasted, I'll give you your money back.
Fair enough, he said, handing her a 5. But I gotta warn you, I've been to Colombia once.
A moment later, the unseen Douglas put out a plate with rice and beans and a chalupa that was certainly appetizing, but significantly smaller than the one he'd seen on the billboard and on the window. It did smell delicious, though, so he didn't bring up that minor detail. He poured some Tabasco sauce onto the tortilla and took a bite. It didn't taste like a chalupa. It tasted better. His taste buds awakened, like they said happened if you quit smoking, and his stomach clamored for it.
Holy disco dancing
Jesus, he exclaimed, with his mouth still full.
This is... You weren't kidding.
The woman laughed, but he could tell he'd offended her, probably with his freebie talk. No need for worry. He'd tip her big. He took another bite.
Hey, you better put down another 6, lady. These are fuggin'.
He paused to chew and swallow.
To die for?
She finished.
Nice to hear it.
She came around the counter with something in her hand. A black tube.
Meat's sometimes hard to come by,
she explained, still sweet as ever.
But it sure makes them tasty.
What's...
he began. But she lifted the tube to the back of his head, and a lead bolt shot out of the cow killer. Immediately, Anthony's body went rigid. Then he fell forward, hard onto the counter, sending his coffee cup flying. As it shattered, Wendy couldn't be too upset about that. This stranger had been heavy.
I was wrong, Doug, she called. This guy'll make 40 chalupas easy.
Her little boy ran out from the back and changed the sign on the door from open to sorry, we're closed. He pulled shut the blinds, 1 at a time, and quick as a wink. He grinned when he saw the body. Wendy went to get a washcloth as her husband stepped out with the big hefty bag for the meat. As they worked, they sang the Chalupadale jingle together. For them, at least, it never got old. The end.
Okay, and we are back. And that story, it had the, what do you call it, working title of Chalupadale. But I don't really know what it's called because I still have like two more sentences to write before it's done. But I'm in the car. I'm driving toward meeting up with Big. So I figured I might as well get this recording out of the way. But hey, listen, this story, I hope you liked it. I hope it amused you. It's really only written for you. For the loyal listener of the Rish Outcast. I did another episode the last time I went to meet Big, which was the same week, because there's a movie opening today and he and I are going to see it first day, like we young people. We're getting together twice this week. Just don't tell his wife. And I did a Rish Outcast the first day this week, Monday, when we were getting together. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and play that right now because I think it says all that I need to say about the story you just heard. Except for, if you like it, let me know. Because, I had so much fun writing this little thing. Never for a second did I believe, you know, that this was a work of art or this was something of quality. And I'll tell you something, that takes the pressure off. It makes me feel like I can just be free and do whatever I want, which is fun.
Testing. Around here, we never sent to bed early, and nobody makes us wait. Around here, we stay up very, 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 very late. I can't see nothing, nothing around here. Catch me if I'm falling, catch me if I'm falling, catch me 'cause I'm falling down.
Oh, shoot, this is already going. That's what, right? I was afraid, because I'm running late, that I wouldn't have time to meander on this particular Rish Outcast like I usually do. Of course, it's a Monday night, and I'm going to meet Big for lunch, and hopefully we'll record something. But we haven't done it in a little while, and... Oh, okay. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yes. I was saying, usually I have plenty of extra time, but today I forgot that tomorrow morning they're picking up the trash, and it made me late. So I don't have a ton of time, but I am willing to share what time I have with you. I actually haven't done a Rish Outcast in a long time. I had a bunch banked, and I felt like it was my priority to get those out. And so this is the first one in a while. I guess the Q&A was the last one I recorded. But how much of that song did you get? When I was a young man, I heard that song Round Here by Counting Crows for the first time. And it was so sad. That the despair in that song is really palpable. And it spoke to me, and I hadn't heard it in a long time. And then I heard it on YouTube. Somebody had uploaded a whole Counting Crows concert. And it had been years since I had really sought out any of their stuff, although I used to be a huge fan. so I watched the concert or listened to it while I was working, and I don't know, just that song has always meant something, spoken to me, and it reminded me of, you know, the power of art. Suddenly I was a young man with my life ahead of me, hoping against hope that things would work out, that things would be positive, that maybe this year would be better than the last, to quote another Counting Crows song, but one from a couple years later. I became upset easily, discouraged easily, morose, and hearing that as an older man, I suddenly was that kid again. And I felt for him. I've become a little bit numb. You know what I mean? You know, over the years, you just become calloused or you become inert. Now, you know, I still have a really short fuse and I still get down easily. You know, if somebody says something to me, it will bum me out. But I was a different person then. And I remember, geez, I could go any number of directions with this conversation. But here's where I'm going to go. I remember, you know, putting myself out there a time or two and being rejected. And then being really afraid to put myself out there after that. And there was a girl that I liked in school. And she had asked me one time about how you use the school email or some. I have no idea what she did. She asked me how often I got email or checked my email, and I told her, oh, you know, any chance I can, I'm on the internet, you know. And this was in the days of dial-up, when if you were on the internet, it meant that, you know, somebody couldn't use the phone, or they couldn't be on the internet, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like the dark ages now. But anyway, this girl wrote me an email. And she sent it to the school, the you know, the college email address that they had on file for me, which I never, ever checked, ever. I think, you know, when you first started at school, they said, okay, here's your easy-to-remember email address. And, you know, I had my Rish Outfield one that I've had for all these years. And so I didn't ever check that. And, you know, graduation came. And she said, you know, I never did hear back from you. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, you said you checked your email. Did you never read that email? And I said, oh, the school email. No, I never checked that. And she said, oh. And I checked it. And this was at the very end of the school year, and the very end of college. And she had written me a big, long email saying that she believed in me, and that I needed to believe in myself, and, you know, personal stuff. But she called me, oh geez, I don't know, should I say this or not? I'm going to. She called me her Oscar Wilde. And I was naive, I am naive. I only vaguely knew who Oscar Wilde is, it could mean, you know, well, you're clearly gay. But, you know, you're talented. I don't know. But she wrote me that email. And this goes nowhere. I painted myself into a corner. I could talk about Oscar Wilde. You know, he wrote The Picture of Dorian Gray. It was the only novel that Wilde ever wrote. And I don't know why it was the only novel he ever wrote. But obviously there's some personal stuff in the book. When it was first released, it was released in a magazine. You know, a periodical kind of thing. And the London press said that it was an immoral book. You know, that there was clearly, there were homosexual overtones, or there were, you know, debauchery for debauchery's sake going on in there. And lots of I guess what you'd call sleaze today. No, you wouldn't. I don't know. Lots of whatever they felt was inappropriate. A lot of people said that, you know, it should be banned. And so when he went to publish it, you know, on its own as a book, he revised it and some of those personal details were removed. Now, he also expanded a little bit of it and created a antagonist, I guess, if you think of Dorian Gray as the protagonist. And, you know, there were still people that said, you know, that book is filled with this, and that book is just, oh, this. And but he had removed anything that was overt. So he was able to say, you know, whatever sins you see in Dorian Gray, those are your sins. I don't know why I'm mentioning this. There are these three main male characters in Dorian, in Portrait, Picture of Dorian Gray, and it was Dorian, who is this, like, beautiful, innocent, you know, perfect young man. And then he's got this painter who's super passionate and super optimistic, and he, you know, he puts everything of himself in this painting that he does. And then there's, I think his name is Henry, was it Henry? I can't remember, but there's he's sort of a philosopher. He's a friend of the painter who really becomes enamored with Dorian, and he sort of casts his friendship away with the painter and becomes Dorian's guide into the world of hedonism, you know, the libertine lifestyle. And the weird thing is, this man who sort of corrupts Dorian at the beginning of the book has a family, he has a wife, and I guess he's got children. And anyhow, he doesn't live the lifestyle that he says is, oh, this is the way to live, you know, this is what an artist should be, but I can understand him saying, you know, if I could do it over again, this is how I would live. And Dorian embraces that. He chooses to live everything on the surface, to experience all sorts of pleasure. And because he makes this pact, I guess, with the devil, he remains beautiful and innocent looking, while the painting bears the marks of all his sins and his debauchery and his burning the candle at both ends. And I wish I were smarter, guys. I wish I could find some way to tie this into whatever I wanted to talk about. But Oscar Wilde only ever wrote that one novel. And this is the year, 2015 is the year that I'm going to write a novel. And I've never written one before. And what do I write about? What do I have to say that is personal, that is intimate, that I'm passionate enough about to write a novel about it? There's a sort of a lengthy short story that I wrote called Popcorn Movies, and I've talked about it recently in some other episode. It might have been a podcast that dares not speak its name. And in that story, there's a guy, and he leaves this small town, and he goes out to Los Angeles because he's going to be a rock and roll star. He's going to be in a band, and he's going to strike it big. He's got all these dreams, and his dreams utterly fail. He doesn't succeed. He's only able to make a little bit of money with his music, and then he's forced. I think ultimately he becomes a drug addict, and I can't remember very well if he becomes a drug dealer too. But he despairs. And then his uncle gives him this opportunity to come back and try and start again in that hometown back in, you know, in the Midwest, in flyover country, right? Because his uncle has bought the old movie theater in this little town. And he says to Don, come on out and you can run this movie theater with me. And so Don sees it as a chance to start again. And I did. I put a lot of myself into this story. The main character's name, I think it's Donald Blake. And I didn't realize until later that Donald Blake is Thor's alter ego, or, you know, the alter ego that he had back in the day when he was a Hulk-like character or a Billy Batson-like character, where Donald Blake could become Thor. I guess he would tap his walking stick, I think, on the ground, and the walking stick would become Mjolnir, which is Thor's hammer, and he would wield the power of Thor. So he was able to just be a normal man sometimes, but then he could also be this godlike superhero. And a lot of that has just been abandoned. I think around the time Thor was part of the Avengers, they were like, well, why does he have to be Donald Blake at all? And I don't think Donald Blake exists anymore, but somehow that's the name that main character was. And I wish that there was some kind of symbolism or deeper meaning behind that. So I could say, oh, you know, when you read popcorn movies, you need to understand that this guy is, he's Thor's alter ego, but he doesn't realize that he's got a god within him. Sorry, there was a California Rish Outfield talking for a split second there. There's none of that in there. I've never published popcorn movies, although I keep thinking that I ought to, and part of it is it's a really personal story, and I'm afraid that it's not very good. See, Don, he does have a chance to succeed in the movie business, in the movie house business. And, but it's on such a small scale, and he's really not the instigator of anything. He's just a guy who's working there, and he sees the people around him embrace the movie theater, embrace the movies, and he, I guess he has this choice of, do I continue to do this and be successful in something when it's a bad thing that I'm doing? And I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what the story is about, plot-wise. But the theme of the story, I don't think that there's a theme at all. It's just this guy who's never really in charge of his own destiny, and he just gets to experience success for just a little while. I don't know. He's me. And, you know, I could have made him as pathetic as me. But as Big has explained, when he let his wife read this story, he didn't let his wife read popcorn movies. He let his wife read this story that he was writing about a geeky dude like me. And she's like, why would anybody like this guy? He's pathetic. And yeah, I think that's the thing, is if this character were 100% me, instead of just 70% or whatever, ooh, I think people would just be like, wow, why didn't he just kill himself before the story began to save us this slog through this, you know, mediocre, rambling, pointless story. See, that's my muse talking, right? I've expressed it many times on this podcast that I don't feel it necessary to share my stuff with people, my writing. I write it, and then if nobody ever reads it, that's okay. If nobody ever reads it, then nobody is ever going to say those things. But I have a forum now. I have this podcast that's ostensibly just for my own writing. You know, I guess I've done a lot of like journal type episodes, but you know, this podcast should be the leg up I need to just say, okay, here, I'm going to present this story. I'm going to present this novella that I've written, or this poem, or whatever it might be. And, you know, we've done 15 of these things, right? Or more. I don't know what episode this is. So, I'm getting better. I should be getting better. Gosh, I don't know. I feel bad. There was stuff I wanted to talk about. It was mostly just, what do I write about in a novel? What is my picture of Dorian Gray? What do I feel strong enough about that I can go on for, you know, at least 50,000 words, which is, I believe, what Big said a novel is. Or at least, you know, the bare minimum for a novel. I don't know yet. That's the sad thing.
have been trying to come up with, okay, what is the story that I wanted to write? There are a number of longer ideas that I've had. You know what I mean by longer. You know, they're not just short stories. And for one reason or another, I've never written them. And I'd like to. But most of them are screenplays. In my mind, they're screenplays. They're not novels. And that's because I think I can write a screenplay. I've done it many times. But I don't know if I can write a novel. I've never done it. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's a crutch. Maybe it's me saying, well, I shouldn't write this because I could fail. But, you know, I've already announced, right, that I'm going to write a novel. And so I kind of have to do it. But what to write about? I had this idea for a space opera type story. I mean, it was like a Star Trek kind of story. When I pitched it, if you will, to Big, told him what it was about, it was really easy to say, you know, a Captain Kirk-like character or a Commander Riker-like character, because, you know, Star Trek is something I'm intimately familiar with. And, you know, Big's at least seen Star Trek. He knows who those characters are. That's one that I've wanted to do. And I've started it before. I think I made it 2 pages or 3 pages before I stopped. That's just a premise, though. You know, that's kind of a world that I'd like to write in. And there was one time that I sat down, and I don't think it was into this. I think it was into whatever I used to record on before. Oh, that little MP3 player. You remember that thing? And I just sat down and I said, okay, here's 3 possible episodes of that Star Trek type show. And that was really neat that I said, okay, I could write this story, this adventure, if you will, or this adventure. And yeah, there was one where they meet this, I guess it would be an android, who's damaged and he can't, his memory, if you want to say, his hard drive is full. So he can't learn anything new beyond what he already knows. But he sort of joins the crew because he knows, I can't remember if I wanted him to be a medical droid. So he becomes the ship's doctor, or if he was some kind of engineer and he could fix things, or if he was just going to be some kind of grunt who, you know, was strong and he could carry supplies, you know, from ship to station and station to ship and all that stuff. But I really liked the idea that because his brain was full, he would never become like personally attached to anybody. You could teach him something and he would not know it in the next episode, which is kind of, you know, a cartoon thing or a sitcom thing, you know, the characters never grow and they never develop and they never change. But I just liked the idea that the characters around him do, and they sort of despair that he can't learn a lesson, that he can't get better. Why the hell I'm even telling you this, I don't know, except for I've reached my destination and Big's not here. And so it's like, oh, well, that means I can hang out a little while longer. I can talk. Because, you know, I wanted the opportunity to just be able to talk out whatever was going on in my head. And right now what's going on in my head is, oh, shoot, what if I don't have anything that I want to say? What if I don't have a story that's novel length that I am passionate enough about? Because, look, you have to be passionate to write for months or several weeks or, you know, the whole summer is kind of what I intended to do. Big and I had talked about this panel I went to that was how to write a novel in 90 days. And 90 days is, you know, a season. So it's the summer. I just want to know that I can do it. I know I can write short stories. I wish I could podcast more of them. But you know what I mean. I can do that fine. And some of my short stories aren't even short, but a novel. And, you know, even if it was one of those little commuter novel things, who was it? There was some guy, it was he's a fantasy writer, like Tracy Hickman or Terry Pratchett died. Terry Goodkind, it was one of those guys. He said at this panel we went to, you know, a writing panel that, there are these things that are commuter novels. They're just like 30,000 words, 35,000 words or whatever. And I guess you read them on a plane or you read them on a commute. He didn't explain why they call them commuter novels, but it's a big thing in self-publishing now, because you can charge, you know, $5, $6, $7.99, but you can write two or three of them in a year or more. You don't spend 2 years writing this massive novel. You can just make more money because you're putting more of your stuff out there. And I thought, 35, 40,000 words, I could do that. Maybe that's the goal that I should set, is commuter novel, at least. Okay, so listen, I don't know when this episode is coming out. I don't have a story for it. Shoot. I should have decided to put some kind of story that I've written recently as part of this. Because then I could tell you what I'm working on, or I could tell you about whatever story I just shared. Gosh, I feel bad. I don't want to do just another episode of me talking. Oh, there's Big. But I guess that's kind of what this is. You know, it's a half hour, right? Almost a half hour of me prattling on. And it's got to be something. You know, the other day I was going to write this tiny short story. I was at work, and it was really dead at work. And so I thought, wow, I've got a few minutes that I can do whatever I want. And so I thought I would write a story called, was it Chalupaville or Chalupa Town or Chalupa Acres or Chalupa Flats or something like this. It's some stupid story where this traveler drives through, he sees a sign while he's driving, you know, the next stop, Chalupaville. And he goes, wow, Chalupaville, I love chalupas. I'm going to pull over here. And he stops and there's this cafe and he goes in there and everybody loves chalupas in this town. And he's like, well, I like chalupas too. I'll order one. And they're like, oh, you know, that's all we ever eat is chalupas. So we've started putting new ingredients in them. And you're going to be the ingredient in this week's chalupas. And they kill him. And that's the end of the story. It's stupid, guys. I know it's stupid. But I thought, you know, if I have 15 to 20 minutes at work, I could write a stupid story like that and it could be a Rish Outcast. I thought it would be really amusing, actually, if, you know, there were all these people saying chalupa, like elderly people and children and stuff like that, because that word is hilarious to me. It's just the sound of it has never not been amusing to me. But I think one of the managers, the boss, came over and said, here, I got some work for you. You look like you're bored or whatever. And it was this massive job that took me to the end of my shift, right before the end. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I stayed busy, but I didn't get to write this really stupid story. So you didn't get to hear it. But I'll tell you what, next time it gets slow like that, I hope it does, I'll try and jot down this Chalupa Town story and make it funny, because, you know, that way you've got something. This is Rish Outfield. I will talk to you later, I hope. And I'm going to go say hi to Big. Anyhow, there was something I was going to say about... Oh, okay, I was going to do a little bit of trivia here in the very closing of the story of the episode. The jingle. The food, the little restaurant. Oh, the Tom's Diner jingle. Gosh, Tom's Diner, that is lame. First person that can tell me what that song is will, I don't know. You get to pick the next song Sir Fake Sean Connery sings on the Rish Outcast. That is not a jive turkey offer there, brother. To put a little bookend on the episode. So go ahead, mention it to me, and be well, guys.
Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com for the music so inexpertly used in this episode. The Rish Outcast just happens to be produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Have a nice night. With extra relish. But he'd been on the freeway for 3 hours since then. His big Cadillac Escalade didn't get great gas mileage. Should we see what a Cadillac Escalade looks like? Just in case it's not what I think it is. Oh, it looks like it's a truck. Okay, it's going to be an Eldorado.
Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them right. Everybody wants chalupas. We gonna eat them up tonight.
I actually spelled his name right that time. I gotta change it.
We gonna eat them up. Wait. Everybody wants chalupas. Everybody wants them now. If you wanna eat chalupas, we're the place to show you how.